Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about Cavs-Knicks, which the Cavs somehow lost despite perhaps the best Kevin Love game of the entire season, including some really good defensive effort from Kevin Love. And then we're going to talk about the latest happenings on the trade front, some interesting stuff, some interesting unsuspected things, and also some things we sort of did expect. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My, my. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Kyrie Irving, he's gone. Xbox at him tonight at the cue.
On the blow block.
He put him in cement boots. Colin Sexton for two.
Okay, Evan, how are you doing? How are you doing after Cavs-Knicks ends 139-134? Kevin, 33-13. Colin Sexton with 29. KPJ with 12 points off the bench. All starters for the ninth time this season in double figures. But with the loss, the Cavs, after starting the season 4-5, and shouts to Greg at the Bleacher Report's Greg Schwartz for tweeting this out, the Cavs, since that 4-5 start, are an NBA worst 9-33 since the middle of November. How are you feeling after that game, Evan?
I'm still processing it a little bit. We're recording this immediately after the game ended. We joked saying, like, listen, the Cavs going up against the Knicks seems like a game that may not be winnable. And that game was certainly winnable for Cleveland, but it's just an unfortunate way for things to end. It really sucked watching Jetty get cooked by Morris to close out the game. I think you tweeted out saying that it sucks that Jetty got put on Marcus Morris Island to close out this game. And I'm like, yep, nope, that's pretty accurate. And you know what? Whatever. It's just, it would have been one for Tristan, I guess, if the Cavs were able to pull this one out. How are you feeling after this game?
If I'm John Beilein, if I'm Kevin Love, if I'm anyone that is feeling competitive in that Cavs organization tonight, I'm pretty pissed off.
Like, if I don't you're know if Beilein's competitive anymore, man, he seems like a broken guy.
Yeah, I would like to, like, if I had John Beilein's, like, address, I might send that guy, like, a bottle of wine or something like that. I don't, or like whatever his particular, like, vice is.
Werther's butterscotch.
Wow. Wow, just wow, incredible shit. So here, just some of the things that are, I think, make this game particularly frustrating.
Yeah.
Number one, Kevin was outplayed out of his mind. We had 33 points, 12 of 20 shooting, 4-9 from 3, 5 of 5 from the line, 13 boards, 6 assists, and a block, which you can find, which led to perhaps the best offensive to defensive sequence we've seen from the Cavs all year, defense to offense sequence. He blocked the shot, Jetty dribbles the ball up the floor, and then hits KPJ with like a perfect lob. It was incredible. Nothing more you could want from that or from those two guys. Sexton was pretty good. Had 7 assists. I only against 2 turnovers. Like, he's really made an effort the last couple games, or at least has taken the time off the court to kind of slow things down, and is making some good reads right now. And that's really what you want to see. KPJ looks just really, really good since he's come back. You know, you can quibble about the free throws, but
yeah,
had maybe the highlight of the night with that oop from Jetty. Looked really good. As a team, the Cavs are 18 of 35 on three-pointers. They shot over 50% from three, and they lost. They lost a basketball game. They lost a basketball game where they shot over 50% from three, where the Knicks made 10 three-pointers. The Cavs had a 24-point advantage on three-pointers and lost. That's really hard. That's, like, really hard to do.
I really don't know if the Cavs are ever going to get that great of an offensive performance ever again. And I think that's another source of frustration. And man, like, you want to know a fun fact, Chris? Before this game, the Cavs had lost 10 in a row at home, and this is 11. And of those 11 losses, like, that last one against Golden State, like, holy cow, that was not fun to watch, but this is just incredibly frustrating because this was so within grasp for Cleveland to win.
Yeah, and if you just look at, like, the things that went wrong, it's like, it's sort of the stuff you might expect. It's sort of the stuff you would say, okay, like, yeah, this makes sense that this is going wrong. This makes sense that, like, some of this isn't quite working. I mean, you look at the Knicks, like, they had a pretty big advantage. I'm going to get the exact kind of advanced numbers here, but on fast, the Cavs, according to ESPN's box score, had zero fast break points, which I don't know if that's right, but feels right-ish. The Knicks had 15. If you look at just how the Knicks were able to kind of grind this one out and win, their offense was a little bit better than the Cavs overall points per possession wise. They turned the ball over a little bit less than the Cavs did. And you look at their shooting frequency and shooting accuracy, like, they did much more damage at the rim as compared to the Cavs, took 6% more of their shots up at the rim. And then you look at the transition. So in all transition, the Knicks were plus 7.6 per 100 possessions on any transition bucket. That's an 80th percentile of all team performances this year. Okay, the Cavs were negative 5.4% per 100 possessions. That's in the bottom 3% of all performances this year. Off of live rebounds, an area where the Cavs have been abused again and again this year, the Knicks were plus 3.7 points per 100 possessions. In the 79th percentile, the Cavs were minus 1.4 points per 100 possessions in those same things. Basically, the Cavs just, like, got beat in the ways you'd expect, and, like, Kevin Love being absurd and the other good stuff just, like, was not enough. That's, like, just an incredibly frustrating thing to view this team and to see, like, them just play that way against another really bad team, the second really bad team they've played in consecutive games, and to lose like that in overtime is that's a really, really tough pill as well. We are not there. I have not seen some of the post-game stuff come through, but I can't imagine that's going to be, like, a fun locker room to navigate tonight for the press folks there.
No, I would absolutely agree with that. And I was kind of just, like, taking a peek at the bench, and it's when you texted me, yikes, 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 yikes. And I was just kind of looking at the TV when you said that. And you could just look at this team, like, everyone looks so gassed and so tired because you could tell, like, they wanted to win this game so bad because the Cavs have such a bad taste in their mouth lately. But at the same time, like, you could see in, like, Larry Nance's face, like, holy shit, we lost again. Like, just that look on his face. And I'm like, yeah, I feel the same way. And you know what? Shouts to Larry Nance. He had, I think, a career-high 18 points tonight, and then drawing the start, and also flirted with almost a near triple-double with 18, 8, and 6. And it's just, I hope Cavs fans get used to that because he might be Cleveland's starting center going forward. So,
you know, I will say this. If there's one other thing besides Kevin and Colin, who were both really good, and again, I tweeted this, but I think it's a real bummer. I think one of the lost things the last 2 years that has been frustrating is that I think Kevin and Colin should be more compatible than they've been. Mm-hmm. I kind of stand by that. Larry Nance, like, you know, in one way that I think worked and I think made life for Kevin a little bit easier, and this is one of the things I would have asked if I was there. Larry can at least a little bit more than Tristan. The team defenses don't really defend him out to the three-point line, and, like, I don't think they would in the playoffs in particular, but they come out further than they do on Tristan. They, like, just leave Tristan alone when he's up there, and it kind of gives defenders a chance to slide back and kind of block up, guck up the paint for cutters. If Kevin's, you know, put, like, got the ball on the block or something, or Colin's coming around on a pick and roll, when Larry's out there, there's a little bit more room to work. And if Kevin is the only guy kind of spacing the floor in that way, it kind of helps to have Larry out there with him to do that. So there is something I like about that, even though Tristan's obviously been great this year. That is one of the things I did like, is that Larry's kind of can provide a little bit of a different fit with Kevin. And I don't think I'd have to go and check the numbers, but I don't think that's something we've seen, like, a bunch of this year. I'm going to look that up really quick. Is there anything else that you kind of at least thought was good? Cause again, this is a lot of bad, and it's largely pretty frustrating.
I mean, we could pull a lot of good of the individual performances, but, you know, I did come up with a pretty good joke, and I'm just trying to work this in real quick. So Cleveland, on the season, averaged 16.4 turnovers per game, which is second worst in the league behind Atlanta, who averages a league worst 16.6 turnovers per game. Tonight, Cleveland had 14, so maybe they're trending in a positive direction. And one of the big snafus with John Boeheim is how he doesn't make adjustments. Chris, while you're doing this research, do you play NBA 2K at all?
I have. I have not in recent years, but I'm familiar with the game.
Okay, cool. but I forget which version it was, but my player, if you or like your team turns it over too many times, the generic assistant a coach that they copy and paste for whatever team you're playing for will grab you and yell at you, too many turnovers, and your virtual NBA superstar shakes his head in disgust. You know, looks like there's a problem. Oh, well, Google thought that was really funny in the background.
Thanks, Google.
Yeah, it's always listening. You know, that's reassuring. You know, maybe John Bailey can try that with the Cavs to help connect with young whippersnappers just talking about NBA 2K, but, you know, it's just a weird time for the Cavs because this was a game that was winnable. I think they have a 0% chance against Oklahoma City on Wednesday, and then the roster's going to get overhauled or tinkered with, I should say, at least on Thursday. So if the Cavs wanted to start the – well, no, they're home Sunday against – the Clippers, so that's another loss.
Well, assuming the Clippers, like, well, the Clippers are better, Rob. We'll see who they actually play. Like, we don't exactly know who's going to, like, suit up for them. Okay, I haven't looked at their schedule to know that.
That's fair, but the Cavs want to ruin my birthday. Or by all means, just go ahead and have another close game against the Clippers and then blow it. But, yeah, I just don't, I don't know. Like, I feel like this New York game, and the same thing with the Golden State game, those are both reasonably winnable for Cleveland, and if they wanted to kind of start February on the right foot and before they kind of get shellacked by, let's just go through some of their good opponents for the rest of the month. There's Oklahoma City, the Clippers, they play Miami twice, they play Philadelphia, and they play New Orleans and Indiana. And then just to lump them in, at the very end, March 2nd, they play Utah. So that's a pretty brutal stretch for the Cavs coming up. And I've always had the fear, and I wrote about it for Forbes, and that, like, this John Beilein has a very loose grasp of this locker room, it feels like, and the losing doesn't make it any easier for him. And if you don't win games like this, especially ones like against New York, it definitely doesn't make his job any easier, and especially considering, like, how the roster is going to be shaken up, and they might be losing some veteran presence, and they're playing really good teams up in the upcoming stretch. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just I'm just frustrated, I think. I think frustrated is just what I'm going to keep saying, and hopefully I stalled long enough for you to pull up these numbers for us.
Yes, no, you more than did. Okay, so they've played more than I would have guessed. And Love Nance duos this year have played 571 possessions. They're a negative. The two most common ones, they kind of range differently. So there's one that is Deli Clarkson, KPJ, Love Nance. That was a negative 28 points per 100 possessions. And then there's one that's Sexton, Garland, Osman, Love, Nance, which is the starting lineup from tonight, and then it's played 101 possessions together, and that lineup is plus 6 points per 100 possessions. So perhaps we'll see more of that. It's in a lot of the numbers on that. You know, the turnover numbers are bad, and that's not surprising. The defense numbers are bad. That is not surprising. But a lot of the offensive numbers, per Cleaning the Glasses data, is in the upper echelon of any of the Cavs lineups this year. So maybe we see more of that going forward. I don't know. But I think that's something at least to kind of look forward to. You know, again, a tough game. Like, Jetty, I thought, except for getting cooked, like, had a pretty good game. Again, threw that really nice lob to KPJ and stuff. So, like, I think everyone, for the most part, like, played pretty well. They just, you know, everyone except Deli, like, really did something positive, and everyone, and it just kind of didn't matter because the Knicks were, like, less bad.
Yeah, that's a pretty apt way to put it. Like, a lot of good individual performances, but the Cavs couldn't put it together in the end. And whatever, man. I'm just kind of ready for the All-Star break and just kind of taking a break from watching this team lose in frustrating ways.
Yes, I will also just say, I will point out that Colin Sexton had a really good defensive adjustment in this game too. I just want to shout this out. Dennis Smith Jr. cooked him one-on-one, like, somewhere in the second quarter, I think. Like, just totally shook him. Tried to do the same thing the next possession, and Colin locked him up and forced a really bad shot. Colin Sexton does good stuff. Just so for the record, you can pull this out at me, bros. Pecan Sexton does do good things. All right, we're going to be right back with more Locked On Cavs for myself and Evan, getting into some of the trade stuff. Again, you can find coverage of that, of this game, over at Fear the Sword, but find more there. But we're kind of done talking about this one. We're going to now get into the trade stuff.
God.
If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard of all. If you've been a listener of this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans. But you may not know that Locked On Cavs is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Cavaliers fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. And that's not just any podcast listener. That's a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Cavs fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated and with a disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. And once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit lockedonpodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you. Evan, we're back. I'm going to let you pick first. We have three sort of all big men related Cavs trade rumors that happened Monday, or we learned more about these guys' situations on Monday. Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, John Henson. Our last two segments are going to be fully devoted to those things. And updating all you listeners on the latest happenings on the trade market. Evan, where do you want to start?
Let's start with the weirdest one. Why the heck are the Knicks interested in John Henson?
Look, man, I don't know. It's truly like a bizarre thing. Like, I just can't imagine. Like, I would love to have audio of that.
I would too, and I like jokingly tweeted it. But if the Knicks won them, they won the game. They can just send us like one of your misfit point guards or whatever. Because Cleveland doesn't have enough of those at this point. I don't know. It's just it was weird when I saw. I think it was Chris Haynes.
Yeah, it's Chris Haynes from Yahoo, former Cavs beat reporter, Chris Haynes.
So if he says somebody's interested in a Cavaliers player or the Cavaliers player is available, take it seriously. But I was just like, excuse me, why? Of all things, like, do the Knicks have enough? I mean, I guess John Henson's traditionally size-wise a power forward, and they have enough of those on their roster, but I guess at the same time Julius Randle and the Knicks were in trade, or sorry, Julius, the Knicks and the Hornets were in trade discussions centered around Julius Randle, according to the Ringer's Kevin O'Connor, which is still weird because Julius Randle was like the Knicks' big. It feels bad to laugh at the Knicks because, you know,
they beat the Cavs.
They beat the Cavs, but like, I can go to bed with like peace in my heart knowing that James Dolan isn't the owner of the Cavs, because holy cow, things could be so much worse. But anyways, I don't know what the Knicks are doing, but if they want John Henson and they want to throw one of their weirder pieces, like if Frank Ntilikina for some reason is like available and that's what the Knicks are willing to give up, do it, because that's a nice defensive guard that maybe, you know, if Dante Exum isn't really who you think he is, you could keep Ntilikina in there as well. But whatever, I don't know. It's just super weird. I don't get it, but maybe this is why I don't run an NBA team. But I was definitely surprised when I saw that there was trade discussions between the Cavs and the Knicks for John Henson. What about you, buddy? What are your thoughts on this whole situation?
You know, it's bizarre. It reminded me that I didn't mention that the Cavs were just totally destroyed on the glass in this game on Monday. Like, the Knicks had an offensive rating percentage of over 30%, which is just like absolutely wild. And the Cavs needed to rebound really well. And if they just rebound a little bit better, the Knicks pulled down, I'm going to pull this up, make sure I have this correctly here, 46 total rebounds, 12 on the offensive end. The Cavs pulled down 34 total rebounds. So the Knicks had a big advantage there, and maybe like they're just like, okay, we'll take John Henson and make sure we can always just at least rebound the ball with like our mega big lineups, which are very weird, because Marcus Morris like might be traded too, apparently, or they might want to keep him. I don't know. The Knicks are weird. But if like the Knicks are like, we'll do like you can't do Frankie Smokes and like straight up, but if you could just get like Frankie Smokes and then like Dotson to just like match salary, and then like they get John Henson. I don't know if Frankie Smokes is like good. If Frank Nielkin is like good. He's not a good shooter. Like, you have a lot of weird point guards, but he's a good defender. And like, the Cavs are not going to be good anytime soon. So like, why not? You know, I think he could play with either. I think he'd be like a really nice guy to like him and Exum. Like, you could have like kind of platoons of like Exum and Sexton and Frankie Smokes and Garland or something like that. Like, you could do stuff like that just to kind of make those things sort of work and just see if it works. And maybe like you could find something out of that. But if you could get him and like you get value out of that, I would just say do it. You know, like, what, there's no really harm in it. It's not like John Henson's going to be on the Cavs next year or like after the deadline anyway, if he gets, assuming he, mm-hmm. and I would assume he would, wants to get bought out and go be, you know, on a playoff team.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think when you and I touched on it before the Super Bowl, we said either he's going to get, like, him or Brandon Knight are either going to be part of like a three-team deal, or they are, he's going to, one of them is going to get bought out. But yeah, no, like you said, if the Knicks want to give up on Frank Ntilikina, he's 21 years old. He's a 6'5" point guard. He, like you said, he's not a good shooter, but he is good defensively, and he doesn't, off the top of my head or to the best of my memory, have a serious injury history like Dante Exum. So he kind of feels like Dante Exum, except, you know, younger and healthier. So, you know, I'm fine with it. I am totally okay with the Cavs just kind of grabbing some defensive-minded players and just plugging some of these holes they have on the defensive side of the ball. And if, like you said, if Frank Ntilikina is available, and if the Knicks are dumb enough to trade him because they have so many weird point guards on the roster, like, Dennis Smith Jr., like, I remember that was a big trade for them for freaking Kristaps Porzingis, who is having an awesome year, mind you, but whatever. What do I know? But anyways, Frank, I'd be fine with it, but like you said, either Henson, like, the Cavs have to do something with Henson. Either they are going to trade him and try and get some type of assets, maybe pull some picks out of a team, the best possible being second rounders at all, because let's be real, like, John Henson is a good player, but he's not going to pull you a first-round pick. If Jordan Clarkson couldn't pull Cleveland a first-round pick, who was arguably one of the top scorers at the time, John Henson is not pulling you a first-round pick. So I'm totally down with that, like, but yeah, no, like you said, the Cavs have to just kind of make the most of the situation here with John Henson, and if the Knicks are really genuinely interested in getting him, have at it, go for it. Let's see what they, let's get weird. Let's just have a weird second half of the NBA season.
Yeah, I would also add that, we, as of right now, Chris Haynes has reported that those talks have cooled, so we don't know if they're going to happen or go through, or if they're coming back to that. So that's where that, it doesn't, we don't know exactly if Henson, I don't think Henson's like super long for Cleveland, but we'll see if he ends up going to the Knicks or if he goes somewhere else. Let's do Kevin Love next, because there's not really much else left to say there. Basically, it's been reported by Woj, Zach Lowe, Shams, everyone, everywhere, that like a Kevin Love trade just seems like highly unlikely to happen at this point. The Cavs are not going to get the kind of deal that they wanted to. I think some of the I don't want to get into this, Evan, because I think we sort of agree on this, and I don't want to get like super annoyed on this podcast. I think that the discussion that like he should just be like move somewhere for the sake of like getting him somewhere is absurd. It's weird why, like, it's just very bizarre to me that like logic has come out in some degree in some, from some very intelligent people. I don't think Kevin Love's getting traded. And even though he played his ass off and is trying to play like the most, come get me good team, I can help you game on Monday night, he's probably not getting traded come Thursday. And but I do think you are right. And when you tweeted that, if Giannis said like, I'm staying in Milwaukee today, the market for Kevin's probably better than it is right now. I don't have like facts to back that up, but that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. I think it sucks because this free agency class isn't very good, but the teams that are going to be conservative with their cap space have all eyes pointed towards that free agency class that has Giannis as like the headline feature. And if he said, you know what, I'm staying in Milwaukee, and shout out to our guy Ty Windish, I keep giving Ty a lot of plugs, but he deserves it. Giannis is eligible to sign the Supermax, whatever he wants, and he thinks he's going to do it, but, you know, wait till the end of the season or whenever he feels ready to do so, you know, consider all your options. So, yeah, no, that would definitely open up all the floodgates for Kevin to be available in trade discussions. But yeah, no, I agree. Like, it's a little bit of a 50-50 thing. I think the Cavs have let the situation fester for a bit too long, and it's caused Kevin to blow up on two occasions that I know of off the top of my head. The most recent one being where he flipped out on Kobe during or after shoot around, and then there was a end of the season last year where he supposedly blew up on Kobe then. Yeah, no, like, the situation's kind of gone bad, and like, the Cavs have probably said, like, we're going to do right by you and find you the right team, but no, you and I both agree that the Cavs also need to do what's best in the interest of the organization. You can't take pennies on the dollar for Kevin Love and then hamstring this overall renaissance era of the team to not help you long term. And I don't know, I think he'll keep having good games like this. I think he'll keep putting up solid numbers. Maybe they're a little bit of like empty calories because there's only so much he could do to surpass the overall badness of this team. But yeah, no, I don't think there's really much to dwell on at this point. It just kind of sucks. Like, it felt like it was a foregone conclusion a few weeks ago that he was out of here. And then, you know, I think all of us just kind of quickly came to terms, even before, like, national reporters started saying it, like, all right, I think he's going to be here past the deadline, and hopefully he doesn't have another blow-up after that, after 3 p.m. passes on Thursday.
Yeah, that's about right there. Okay, one last break, and then we're going to be back to talk about Tristan Thompson and what's going on with him. So stay tuned for more on Locked On Cavs. All right, Evan, we are back. Tristan Thompson did not play Monday night. It was a late scratch due to a quad injury, is what the team says. I haven't seen anything come out in regards to like any update on his status, if exactly what Beilein has said about him. But as reported, I think was it Chris Haynes that reported this as well, that Tristan, yes, Tristan Thompson is available. You have a mix of teams interested. The Cavs, it seemed like they're trading him, or interested in trading him. There's some speculation there about what teams are actually interested in him. I don't think there's like any, you know, precise deals yet as to what's coming, but this is the sign, I think, that, you know, I think that this is, Evan, this the biggest sign here is that this is just one of the things where it's like everyone's for sale, and Tristan, just maybe there's a bigger market there for Tristan than we would have thought considering his salary number.
Well, I have a question for you, because you and I both agree that Chris Haynes is also pretty well connected to Rich Paul, which, you know, is a very special gift to have.
Pretty clutch, you might say.
Pretty. I mean, everyone thought I had the puns, but do you think that maybe Tristan and Rich were negotiating? Well, the Cavs asked Rich, all right, what's your number for an extension with Tristan? Rich gave it to them. The Cavs said no. And then Rich went to Chris Haynes and said, all right, well, Tristan's available in trade talks. And I don't know. That's what I kind of feel like. That's where this is coming from. Because you and I both felt that the Cavs were going to hold on to, you know what? Maybe we are jinxes, because we joked yesterday saying that we both picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl and they won. And I thought to myself, you know what? Maybe we aren't jinxes, but here we are. We jinxed Tristan out of Cleveland. Look at us. Who would have thunk? Not me. But anyways, I don't know. It's just, it kind of, like you said, it feels like everyone's available at this point for the right price. And I think maybe those extension talk kind of stalled out and Cleveland just realized, like, listen, it's just not going to work. If that's the kind of money you're looking for, let's just flip you to a contender and get what we can get. And I don't know. Let me ask you this. If you were the Cavaliers, who, or maybe not the Cavaliers, if you were an NBA team, what three NBA teams would make the most sense to you to try and acquire Tristan at the trade deadline?
Zach Lowe talked about this in his podcast, so I'm just going to steal it. But I think the Wizards one, if they're like trying to like be a little bit better this year for just some weird reason, I think it's pretty funny to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think he'd make sense in Boston. There's just no real way to get that deal done.
Yeah.
And then the one I come back to that I think I really, really like is probably the Clippers. And I'm going to like construct sort of, I think the Clippers, if you did Tristan And, you know, you take back, you're taking back, I think, Zubac or Trez, one of those two guys. Probably
Trez
is probably the Zubac. There's arguments, I think, for both. And then I have to see, I think you have to patch together some stuff to get the money to work. I'm going to try this here. But I think that's kind of the one that makes some sense. I think it's got to be a contender. And again, like the money on this is not like the easiest thing in the world. You have to get them back. I think it would have to be Mo Harkless's expiring to get you close. So if you do Trez and Mo Harkless and Tristan, that deal actually works. So you could do that. That could be something you do. If you do that, if you're the Cavs, I think it's certainly you're obviously not keeping Mo Harkless. Maybe like this would be like a three-team construction where Tristan goes to the Clippers, Harkless goes to somewhere else, and you get back Trez and you get back like a contract with some money on it for next summer. And then you're probably, you get Trez's bird rights, I think, and then you'd be obviously planning on kind of re-signing him and rolling with him going forward. If you wanted Zubac, you would kind of get a more traditional, a little different, obviously a very different center. But he's cost controlled the next 4 years. I think the Clippers, if you're thinking about them, they probably would prefer that cost control aspect of it. Just considering the amount of money they're paying guys. So those are the ones that make sense to me. I don't think I have any other ones that particularly jump out to me. For me, it's LA, it's the Clippers, it's the Celtics, and the Wizards, because I think that would just be weird, even though I don't like the idea of Tristan in a Wizards uniform, or any uniform feels very weird to me, but the Wizards one feels particularly weird. What about you? Is there anywhere that I didn't mention that you want to elaborate further on that you kind of think would be a landing spot for Tristan?
Well, I agree. I think the Clippers are the best possible destination for him if you really had to, like, do the right by him kind of thing, and the fact, because he's going to an instant title contender, and the fact that a team that's looking to upgrade maybe at the center position, but Trez has been really good for them this year, though, is the problem. I know, like, they probably won't retain him, but it's just tough because I don't know if Tristan Thompson's enough for them. Because I know Mo Harkless has not been very good for them. So, like, I think his contract will be the linchpin of this deal. But I think they'd be more apt to get rid of Zubac than they would Harrell. And I guess it'd be nice to have Zubac and Zizek. And then older Cavs fans can confuse the two last name-wise, which would be just a hoot and a holler. But, I think that one makes sense. I agree that Boston makes sense too. Denver could be like a sneaky fun option as well, as maybe just some depth behind Jokic. And I know Tristan isn't, at least in our eyes, is too good to be coming off the bench for like Cleveland and probably most teams. But I mean, I think he'd be a lot of fun in Denver. Just kind of going down the list. I know Dallas just traded for Willie Cauley-Stein, but if they really wanted to get it like a good upgrade, they could always trade for Tristan as well, and he could go back to Texas where he played in college. But I feel like there's going to be plenty of teams that are interested in lining up for Tristan's services. I'm just more curious at this point what kind of return Cleveland is expecting, because I believe it was reported they're expecting at least a first round pick in return. Probably not getting that unless he said it's like in a three-team deal and Cleveland is taking back a little bit of bad salary in this in the end, and then that way they get a first round pick. Like, I think that's possible. But if it's a 1-for-1 deal where Tristan's being sent somewhere and then the team that is receiving him is sending salary back, and at best you're probably just gonna get some second round picks, which again is a tough pill to swallow because he's arguably Cleveland's best or second best player, depending on what kind of Kevin Love you're getting that night. So it's just not the best feeling overall, but, you know, the Cavs do have to do something to try and accumulate assets because they're a team that is in the middle of a renaissance with no direction right now, and they have to kind of start putting the pieces together to find a way to get out of the forest.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you could get 2 seconds and then, like, or an interesting young player, I think Tristan has the same, I think, probably more of a, I think if you're grading this on a curve, Tristan would be, out of the expiring, the most valuable guy to another team. You know, it would be, Tristan, then JC obviously got a good amount, and then Henson and Knight are just, and Delly are just sort of all kind of like okay.
Yeah, they're okay, but those contracts are a little easier to move, I think.
Yeah, but Tristan, in terms of like raw value, I think certainly is the expiring. It has been the expiring with the most value. You know, I think just could come in and really help. The team has a track record of really performing well in the playoffs, and is a good locker room guy. All that stuff is like checks a lot of boxes. The salary's hard to mention. Clippers are one of the teams that could really go out and get him. So if you could get like 2 seconds, you know, like Trez or whatever it is, I don't know what the package sort of looks like. I don't know if like the Cavs would prefer to get someone like Jerome Robinson, who I know like Trevor didn't love coming out of college, and I don't think he's been remarkable in any way, but like you look at the guys in the back of the roster, like do you want maybe Terrence Mann you could ask for? Just Scott, that's the kind of stuff you're looking at, guys on sort of the edge of that roster. I don't think you're getting Shamit. So it'd be like someone like Jerome Robinson and someone like Terrence Mann are sort of the guys you're sort of looking at getting on the fringe of the roster. Mann wouldn't be a bad guy. 6'5" wing was I believe a 23-year-old rookie this year. I'd probably prefer him to Robinson. If you're getting one of those guys, just cost wise, kind of makes some sense. But we'll see. We'll see if Tristan ends up going anywhere. I don't think we have any clear. There's been some teams out there, but not from the places that are, I would say, just normally the most accurate on these things. I have some hunches, but we'll see. I hope if he does get traded, it's somewhere that he can play deep into June, because I do think if Tristan like isn't going to be with the Cavs and doesn't like settle into like a lifer mentor kind of role, I do think for him the most enjoyable thing really would be to keep playing into June and get another. I think for all these guys, I think the way the league is orchestrated with kind of ring chasing and all that stuff, and just got rings being the most meaningful thing for most every player, except for like Vince Carter, shouts to Vince Carter. But I think when you're looking at this, I think if Tristan's not going to be that lifer guy, I would like to personally just kind of see him go play, be somewhere where he can contend. Cause I think that's where I would just like for him to get another chance to do if he's not in Cleveland.
Yeah, no, same. I think I could say the same for any of those guys who have played for Cleveland through that 4-year stretch where they're running through the championships, but Tristan, especially because he's been here since 2011 and he's just kind of like, I don't know. He's just a fan favorite, and we're all super high on him, just like out of our small community, people that we like work and write with. And no, I'd rather see him playing meaningful basketball late into the summer and then being sent to Washington, of all places, just to be miserable for the remainder of the season, and then go sign with a contender on a reasonable deal. And then we'll see what happens. But hey, I was crunching the numbers while you were talking, and I promise I was listening. But if Washington's that desperate and they don't want to attach a draft pick, maybe they can just send us Mo Wagner instead. And John Boeheim has a player he's comfortable with. So
yeah, let's just like get the Michigan guy. So let's just do that.
Oh boy. And then what are the Cavs going to use for graphics when they need the fans to boo? Because Michigan, the Steelers logo. I think it's just those two that they show.
Ben Roethlisberger, they use a bunch. She's Ben Roethlisberger more. No one. I don't even think Steelers fans like Ben Roethlisberger.
It depends.
I don't know if that's right. I'm being a troll.
It's true, but if like it depends where you fall politically. If you're smelling what I'm stepping in, if you're a Steelers fan and you support Ben Roethlisberger,
yeah. Miami, Ohio grad. So for me, not my guy, but whatever.
Yeah, it's okay. I get that.
Yeah, shouts to the Ohio Bobcats. My wife, a Miami alum, though, so house divided here. She doesn't really care, though. I care way more about it than she does, because she's a more sensible human being than I am in like every sense of the word. Okay, I think that's going to be it for today's show. The Cavs lose to the Knicks. Trade stuff is happening. We're coming back all week talking about the trade deadline. TBD on exactly what we're going to cover tomorrow. We'll kind of see how the day unfolds. A lot of stuff can change in an instant. So we will be back tomorrow talking about some things ahead of, and then the Cavs play the Thunder on Wednesday. So we'll kind of see what's going on there once we kind of get closer to that. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs for Tuesday, February 4th. I'm Chris Manning, and thanks again for listening. Talk to you tomorrow.